Excuse me, it's 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and this is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, I am going to bring you a longer segment. In fact, both hours of this show will feature a May 8th book launch event that was held at Next Church here in Kingston. In it, you'll hear Nancy McMillan launching her book called The Call to the Far Shore, Carrying Our Loved Ones Through Dying, Death, and Beyond. The launch also featured musical performances by Wendy Llewellyn Perkins, Andrea Layton, and words of welcome and an invocation by Jeanette, and then also by Aileen Stewart. This nearly 90-minute event will begin in a minute or so and will run uninterrupted through and halfway into the second hour. Just a brief mention at the start. This is normally something I do at the end of each hour, but since I won't have that opportunity here this hour, I remind everybody that I do upload both hours of my show each week to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. They will remain there for 3 years. Let's go ahead and move straight into it. Again, in case you tuned in half a minute or a minute late, I will repeat what you're going to hear. It's a May 8th book launch event held at the Next Church here in Kingston. And in it, you're going to hear Nancy McMillan launching her book called The Call to the Far Shore, Carrying Our Loved Ones Through Dying, Death, and Beyond. Let's go ahead and just begin. Here we go.
People welcoming you here this evening. And part of what we're doing here is making a place for death, for dying and death. A place that we come with regard and respect and acknowledgement that death is an absolutely necessary part of life. And it's part of the deal when we receive our first breath that there will come a time when we're going to have to let go of that breath. And Nancy and I used to work together, I'm Janita. We used to work together at KGH, and it's quite remarkable to me how she has gathered in so much with support from so many people, but also many behind her. And I think about part of what I want to do is make a place for our dead, for our ancestors. And I double-checked today. If you go back 9 generations, you go to your 9th great-great-great-grandparents, it took, I think it's over 2,400 people If you go back that far, for you to be here, it took that many people for you to be here. It's so remarkable when we think about it that way. And sometimes I think about our ancestry, our dead, our people. You know, it's like a huge root system. If you think of a tree and the root system below, and that's what's behind us and what's brought us here. And so part of what I would like to invite you to do is to remember your dead for a moment as we're here. But before that, we do that, I really want to speak of partly this land that we're on, this unceded land that we have the benefit of living on, our children do, our grandchildren, some of us with great-grandchildren here, and so many people before us. And when I think of our dead, it's so much more than the people we knew that we remember, those whose, you know, eyes we got to see and look in their faces and see some of their soul through those eyes. It's all the beings that help to sustain us and everything else that's living here. All the plants we've eaten, all the chickens we've eaten, all the animals, everything. And not just us. Plants need to be sustained. Animals need to be sustained. Birds do everything. And this is what makes up life. And life comes from death. If you look at your compost pile or dirt in your flower plant or in your garden, it's made up of everything that's died. And that's where life comes from. And so I'm grateful to be here this evening to help to celebrate Nancy and the work and the gifts that she's brought to us and bringing to us and bringing into the world. And I want to just invite you for a moment. You can say names out loud, but you can just quietly in your own mind to remember those that you've known or that you've heard of who have died before you, who helped to make you who you are today, who've influenced your lives in so many ways. And you're doing this with people in your lives and with children and grandchildren. And so let's just take a moment to honor our dead in this remembering, just a moment of silence. Thank you.
We remember your names, remember your names, remember your spirits. We give thanks for your lives, give thanks for your lives and the gifts you've given. Dear beloved ones, beloved ones, we remember your names, remember your names, remember your spirit.
Yeah. You're everywhere.
So thank you, Wendy Luella, for your gift of voice and song, and to Janita for the invocation. The room feels fuller since we've gathered more. And my name's Aileen Stewart. I'll just, before we get into, I have the honor of introducing the author of the book we're about to launch. But before we do that, just a couple of housekeeping things. There is one bathroom down the stairs that way, and I believe there's another one at the back. We will have an introduction, some song throughout. Nancy will read from her book. We'll have some time for question and answer and conversation, a community conversation after the readings, and then there'll be some time afterwards for some refreshments And at that point, Nancy will be signing some books, and there will be books for sale by Novel Idea. If you have a cell phone that's still turned on, if you wouldn't mind silencing it, that would be appreciated. So as I said, my name's Aileen, and I've known Nancy about 9 years. I was new to Kingston, and we had the one person I knew in Kingston was Tammy Caldwell, and Tammy said to me, "Oh, you have to meet Nancy." And I don't know what it was that she saw in Nancy and I that she thought we should connect, but she was right. Nancy was pivotal to my integration to the Kingston community. Now, Nancy is small in stature and soft-spoken, but don't let that mislead you. She has a strong will and an even stronger heart presence. Nancy's the kind of woman who makes things happen. She can move steadily forward towards her goals. And many of you here have probably known Nancy much longer than I have and been involved in different projects and endeavors with her, and so you know this to be true. My inspiration to offer community death care in Kingston came from the nudges that Nancy gave me. Sometimes they felt more like little kicks than nudges, but she kept me moving forward in that way. And together we created a group called Closing Time, which was 12 women. We met at my house a number of times over a couple of years and talked about all things death and dying. And some of those women are here tonight. And through the course of that gathering, we decided to have a simulation of what it would be like to care for a loved one after their death. So two of our members took on the role of being the dead person, and the rest of us did the ministrations to care for their body and move them into a coffin. And we learned a lot through the process about the practicalities, but we also were incredibly moved by the process, and especially the two women that were the dead bodies, what it felt like to be surrounded by love and cared for. And Nancy already had a vision when we started doing this. She had a vision of what she wanted to offer to her mother when her mother's dying time came. And through this process of us doing this time together and our conversations, it allowed her to make more concrete plans and have a community of support that could help this happen. So Nancy's mom's Marion McMillan, and Marion's home funeral was the first home funeral that I had helped guide. And I am so grateful to Nancy and her family for the trust that they placed in me to help us navigate through that together, and we did it with a group of other women from the Closing Time. Through this experience with Nancy, I developed the confidence to go on to offer workshops and guidance to other families that wanted to care for their loved ones at home on their own. Now, Nancy's experiences and reflections also led, as she always was a writer, but it led to her writing these experiences down. And this was the beginning, I believe, of her manuscript for this book. And she worked diligently crafting this legacy project over the next 6 years. And here we are today celebrating the fruition of that. Now, I know when people in our acquaintance, you know, say they've written a book, we sometimes feel the obligation to read the book because we like the author, they're our friend. I was looking forward to seeing what Nancy had created because I had little snippets of the process along the way. And I found this book to be an easy to read and well-written book. It drew me in and engaged me. And so the book itself was meaningful, engaging, and offered lots to reflect on, much like the friendship I share with Nancy. So here now is Nancy, who will tell you more about her book and offer you some ideas to ponder.
Oh, good evening. Is this right?
Okay.
I couldn't ask for a more thoughtful and touching introduction. Aileen and Janita, wherever you are. There's Janita. Thank you, Janita. We're learning new ways to be together and creating new ways to have meaningful ways to move into ceremony or ritual, and we've got to kind of make it up and be a little creative sometime. That's been my experience through this whole process. So it's a work in progress. So thanks for being with us, and it's remarkable to look out and see people from so many different parts of my life here. Thank you for being here and helping to make the call to the far shore here, right here. I have a few excerpts. Then I look forward to some conversation about all of our experiences that we all have, no doubt. And of course, a special bow of gratitude to my mother for helping frame this story and bring it, usher it out. At the bedside, I say quietly, "You are looking so frail, Mom. How many last whispers of you in this body are left? You acknowledge my presence from a far off place, and nursing staff come in and out, and we sit together in a jagged way with your jagged breathing. Was it just a few days ago that you said almost lyrically, 'I accept whatever happens. I accept whatever happens. I accept everything that happens, and I will carry on.' Mom, I can't tell you what a staggering thing this was to hear from you in these many months of seeing a deeper side of you emerge, the result of the long haul of aging and dying and the old self stripped away. I have come to see you as a sage, someone to look up to and listen to. You've opened wide the door for death, no longer resisting the pull. You're becoming the elder I longed for." The nurse comes in to say that because of Mom's rapid breathing, she may be in discomfort, and she wanted us to give her something to make her more comfortable. I'm surprised, because what I see is my mom dying. I've become minutely attentive to possible signs of pain. I don't see them. I can't know for sure she is uncomfortable, nor do I know what this really means. Does it mean she is suffering? I do not see my mom suffering. I see her dying. Mom was hard to rouse, but not completely unconscious. Her breathing was now softer and irregular, not with mouth wide open and eyes glazed over, as I had come to expect from my work in the hospitals with the ill and dying. Yesterday, I asked one of the staff, "How much longer?" The response took me by surprise. "Well, this is new for us. I mean, she's not on any pain medication, so things look different. She's not like the rest of them, so it's harder to tell and harder to know what to do." It's true, many doctors and nurses do not have a lot of experience being with unmedicated dying. Similarly, a midwife told me there's less and less experience in being with unmedicated birthing. I remember Mom's recent words, "I accept everything that happens." So I stall the medication, saying, "Let's see how things unfold for the next few hours and reevaluate."
"I accept whatever happens. I accept and I will carry on.
And so begins the story. And as I said, thanks to my mom for ushering the frame of the story in. But as the writing progressed, more layers came in, and some of my work in the hospital and my experiences there came in. And then I realized I needed to talk about more about me and my personal experiences with illness and mortality. And although this was 20 plus years ago, it brought up all those reflections again. And I had some writer friends who kept telling me I had to go deeper and excavate what's there. And so that's part of the writing journey. So, great danger, I'm being told in my Zen koan dream. Get back to your house and prepare. I'm running down the hill to my house now in my dream, shutting the shutters, locking them, drawing the curtains upstairs and down, then bolting the doors, all of them. Now prepared for impending danger, I'm going to the front door, opening it wide, meeting what is to come. The scene switches to a mound of earth, my own graveside. Tumultuous times, like having cancer, bring forth a necessary heroism for most people. It's a time when meaning is wrenched and titrated out to get through each day. For me, moments of grace arrive unexpectedly, and something new emerged in the process, with a greater acceptance of life and death. Cancer, increasingly prolific, does seem to be a collective kind of illness. My anthroposophical doctor in Toronto gently said to me at the outset, "You're not sick because of doing something wrong, or because you haven't forgiven your mother or some such thing. You're going through this because cancer is a force in the world, a hardening force, and it needs to be met. It has a low archway, and all of us will have to go under and through it." His thoughtful manner touched me. And then he added, "Thank you, Nancy. You have taken this on, not just for yourself, but for the world. How you go through this will help others to do so." I didn't know fully what he meant, but his words eased my soul and brought meaning to the undertaking. I now wonder about the nature of other forms of collective illness. Fear is synonymous with it all, and its own form of contagion.
I accept whatever happens. I accept whatever happens. I accept everything that happens, and I will carry on. Yes, I will carry on.
And then my dad comes into the story. Being with him when he died, when I was in my 30s, I guess it was, opened up that door of death for me, being up so close to it and not having been around it before. But in that midnight hour, being alone with him and being present at that time, was an initiation of sorts. And it set a tone for me deciding to go into that career eventually. And it also opened up the possibility of staying in connection. And so I started trying to do that. I write, "Shortly after Dad died, I had a distinct sensation, an image, that my arms were somehow longer. that I was seeing a picture of how Dad was going to be working through me, extending my grasp of things, enabling me to do and handle more than I could on my own. I'm wondering about this now as I ponder this new language I'm learning, the language of the dead. And this seemed to awaken.
Are you good?
Okay. And this seemed to awaken more of my dead. My relations, whom I can't say I was overly close with, but who had died, started to pop up in my dreams and in my awareness, leading me down a road of exploring the inner side of how we connect, and also then the outer search of my heritage that was opened up especially through my sister's research, through, again, serendipitous timing and connection. And I found out I had very little knowledge of my ancestors, like barely nothing. And all of a sudden this road opens up and I discover names going back to the 15th century and the impact that they experienced across the far shore, things like the Scottish Highland clearances that brought them to this shore, and having to travel the seas and leave the land that they know and the people they loved, and to travel the seas to find a new home. And so it's a great privilege to find a thread back to that. So yes, I come from a long, long history of holding in things that matter most, because that's what trauma can do. What is certain is that my own family shadow is braided into the complex reality of a culture steamrolled over time and again. Yet, if we carry intergenerational trauma, and we do, then we also carry intergenerational wisdom. Aha, the other wing of the blackbird coming into view. And so it is in every family. Hand over hand passed down, the good, the bad, the hard, the wise, becoming difficult to separate after a while. And in the twisting and turning of these many strands, heat is generated. And in this crucible, an ancestor emerges, one very much present. As storyteller and mythologist Martin Shaw says, awakening to our ancestors, letting them walk beside us, opens up an ancestral hotline.
Awakening.
My call to these Celtic Isle ancestors crosses the water to a far shore, the land of long time ago. Their return wave resonating back into the blood and bone of my soul. An everyday aliveness with the natural world and the elements is my heritage. I'm landed, more grounded, more formed, more found, less of an orphan. I'm now struck by the dawning reality of becoming an ancestor myself. Something is calling me to this shore too. It's as if looking backwards has loosened the confines of what constitutes time. I'm not the only one wondering about the legacy we are leaving, but the phrase future generations, while used a lot these days, feels abstract making my mind go fuzzy and my attention go wandering. I need a way to focus, so I try to picture my grandchildren's faces, if there should be any. Fear enters. I go for a long walk, babbling out loud, addressing my grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, asking them about these future ones waiting to be born. Can they be born, grow up safe, live with nature? Dark thoughts, to be sure. An ancestor's voice speaks to my mind. It's harder to be born. Then, it's not up to us. That night I dream. A child sits before me, looking into my eyes, absolutely still, present with crystalline awareness. The next night, another dream. Small hand waving to me from far, far off in the starry night. With a bursting heart, I wave back, and we smile at each other. Now, in the soft early morning air, I listen. The unborn, our descendants, are more present than we imagine. Yes, more present than even I could imagine. More present right here. Get to wave to the engine of her cur. 6 weeks old. Thank you for making it to this shore. Her mom and dad, Elena and Clint, and what blessedness to have all sets of grandparents in the same room right now. Mm-hmm. Eric and TJ. And, okay, I get to say the other big news today is my sister had a granddaughter today. So the ancestors, our ancestors are very busy today. So welcome to descendants.
There you are, here I am, showing up for each other again, again, showing up for each other again. There you are, here I am. There you are, here I am. There you are, here I am. Waving to each other again, again. Waving to each other again. There you are.
So back to my mother. Outside my family, everyone I spoke with about bringing mom home after death was more intrigued than anything else. We were breaking ground in more ways than one. Yet my nervousness persisted until the day, 3 days before mom died, when an inner voice commanded, "Get the casket." It was like a switch turned on, and I knew the timing was now to make the vigil room ready. I needed to see things in place to imagine the steps that would come afterwards. The long inward preparation was moving into the next phase of action. Soon, Jeff and Linda were called upon to help Michael pick up the pine box coffin from the funeral home. Shortly thereafter, Aileen came to go over the supplies and room setup. We had been warned that in home death care, the casket had to be maneuvered both in and out of a room. I consider this a small detail that would not be an issue. After all, we lived in a regular-sized bungalow, not an apartment building. Soon became evident, however, the casket went into the room only by standing it upright and jostling it through the doorway. This would not do. I'll leave it to your imagination to how we resolve that.
Or read the book.
Practical details are in the book, not just dreams. So yes, and I am going to make a little jump here from this moment to the next moment where we've gone through my mom's death. You know, it's a lot in there, and you know, it's a bit, you know, that intimate side of the quiet side of what happens at the bedside of that, those moments. So I invite you to read that in your own way, and I'll jump to the next part where Mom's body was in the room. We could get there on the massage table. And the funeral directors, James Reed funeral home directors, were gone. And we all looked at each other in surprise. Oops, I think I skipped over today. Oh, maybe. Even delight that we are here and in the midst of this great thing. We did it. We took a deep breath, ready to set to the task before us. But it was Janita who reminded us that there was no rush, to slow down and have a cup of tea and eat something. It's a women for you. We know how to have a party, even in the midst of this. So with tea mugs in hand, and Elena having just baked a pumpkin pie, we sat down and giddiness took over. Elena said, "This feels like a party. This is the way it should be." It certainly did. Barbara Rose had joined us by now, and we all gathered in this comforting womanly space, called together as we were to renew an ancient and timeless practice of caring for our dead. And then moving a little further ahead, and I write, though traditions break down, the underlying intent behind them still yearns to be honored. We have a psychic need to do something for the newly dead. That's why there are ceremonies rich in symbols, the language of the unconscious and spirit. But these are becoming rationalized out of existence. Coming together in community at the time of death is a given across time and culture. These customs have arisen to support the bereaved, but also importantly, to help the deceased on their way. So I couldn't help resist. In the midst of this, to rather spontaneously invite my closing time friends over for a visitation. My mom didn't have many friends left, family left at this older age of her dying, so it really was just a smaller gathering of our closer family and closer friends who'd been involved. So without much advanced preparation, they came over, and because they're musical, as you're gathering tonight, became a beautiful circle where people would take a moment going into the room where my mother was laid out and sit with her for few moments and then come back while we sang. So it became a ritual. Not that we planned it or knew what we were doing, but by trying to pay attention, it became a ritual. And the last hymn that we sang, Amazing Grace, was Mom's favorite. And it surely reached the place of heaven on earth, surrounding her on whatever journey she was now on.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a soul like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but I
Thank you. Wendy Luella. Beautiful accompaniment. And beautiful evening together. Thank you. It's been a bit of a feast, at least for me, and hopefully for the many of you here and the many that are leaning in to join into this delicious way of being together. What am I doing now?
Andrew.
Yes.
In conversation.
We are moving into Q&A or conversation, and part of that is to, you know, here we all have our experiences in this realm, our own, and caring for other people, and we all find our way with it. Of course, my story is just my story of trying to unpack it and to travel down that road a little bit further. And the one cool thing is that we're now in a time when death and dying is talked about more. It's out of the closet. And so it's ripe and in the air, but I think the next challenge is for us to know how to work with it and transform with it and make it part of our whole circle. So we have a chance to talk a little bit, and to enter into that, this part, we have a special guest. Where's Andrea?
She's back there.
Andrea Layton, who you may know from her other musical offerings with her partner, Ted Layton. We're friends, and in talking about, you know, my book over the past month, she relayed how she was writing a song, and she played it for me, and it was so beautiful, and it just is another, you know, another person who's exploring her own grief and her own experience with death and dying and transforming it through her creativity, and helps us all. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Nancy, for inviting me here tonight. I wrote a song, and it took me 18 years to do it. My mother and my brother passed away in 2007, and it's taken me this long to write about my journey, my experience, my heart with that. I'm absolutely terrified. I don't like people being so far away from me, so if the spirit moves you to come closer and stand near me, please do. It's called Hold My Hand. It helps to turn the volume up. He arrived at midnight, all tired and worn, ready to sit by her side. She was waiting. Whispered, I don't want to die. Mama, I'm here, hold my hand. I will stay by your side till morning light. Close your eyes and dream. The angels had to know. 3 months would pass, and I'd be sitting by your side. You knew it was over. You knew you must go. I didn't want to ever say
Thank you so much, Andrea, for sharing that. So now we're at a point in our program where we can open the floor for any reflections that people have, either from Nancy's readings or some questions that they might have. Mainly we're looking for kind of a conversation. And if anyone would like to begin, they could either just stand up or just start speaking, and Nancy will address any questions.
So my name is Dale, and boy, this brought up memories for me. I remember when my father died, he was in a home, and just minutes after he died, just lying down in the bed with him and putting my arms around him and my sister going on the other side of him. My mother couldn't do this, but we just wrapped him in our arms and just said, "Safe journey, Dad." And it was such a beautiful experience for me. I don't know about for him, but I do have a question for you, Nancy, and that's just around the legalities. Is it okay to bring a body home to your house? Can you choose where you bury a body? Mm-hmm. Just those kinds of things.
Sure. Thank you for sharing that intimate, real experience, and to me that is a bit of my experience and the surprise of, and I hear that from people who are close to to their beloveds dying, the tremendous, you know, stretching of grief and bereavement, but that there is a quality of beauty that comes through. So thanks for reminding us. So bringing a body home, we are fully within our right to do so. It's often not realized, and it's peculiar because it wasn't very long ago where that was the way it was. And it really was how I was able to bring my mother's home, because I asked her. I thought she would be alarmed, but she had a memory of her mother being in the parlor when she was a young woman, when her mother died. So the thought of her following in her mother's footsteps, she was so deeply honored, and that gave me the courage to go ahead. So we have to get a little more comfortable ourselves with it, and you know, that's sort of our death care group came together to give us confidence to know how we could do it if we felt called to do it. So it helps to have some people around, because there's things involved in it. It's not complicated, but you do have to have your heads up.
I have a friend who died at home, but they had cold packs around the body. That's part of it.
That's right, yeah. So there's different ways you can do that. And in the book, I describe how we did it with my mom, using Tecna ice. And it was fairly straightforward, easier than what you might imagine. And Elena's a death care guide, and there's others amongst us here who have done that training, and so certainly very doable. And I talk about in my book too about how wonderful it was that I worked with a funeral home that was very obliging. It would be, you know, the minimal, encouraging. And Heather is here, so thank you, Heather, for coming and being the encouraging person in the funeral home to help me go ahead and have a home funeral when so there was some irony there that I got the encouragement from the place. I wouldn't have expected it. Does that answer your question about that? Now, the legalities of burying, that's a slightly different question, and you know, the green burial people are here from kind of share hats. So that's another question. It's not so easy to bury a body on property. So if you do need a cemetery generally, unless it's a cremation remains, and then there's a gray area about that.
I'm wondering if you could speak to what, if you could imagine your grief period in the 3 days you were with your mom after death, what that might have looked like for you grieving if you couldn't have those days, and what that bereavement period might have looked like if you think of like your, say, your work experience or when your dad died, and how that compared and impacted maybe the longer term grief.
I got to do a lot of grieving up close, and that there's something about being up close to your dead loved one where the reality just seeps in so deeply that I just got to experience it in its fullness. So it could come to its fullness and maybe a ripening maybe more easily. That would be my... That's what most people say in being up close to the person's body who's died. It's an awakening experience that you realize this person is no longer in your body. And so that clarity is very present. And whether or not you can feel them in another way, sometimes that takes a while. But the possibility starts presenting itself because you know that there's something more. The body isn't holding it anymore. So you kind of have to wrestle very deeply in that time, yeah.
Yeah. And do you think, or could you guess, if more people did it, how it might change when we look at things now with like prolonged grief disorder in the DSM-5, or moving more into grief being more of a mental health, that if we went back, that we might really, could we change the direction of, you know, grieving? And that's kind of a big question, but
well,
I just wonder.
Posing it that way, because I certainly, I guess I hold that as a hope and image that that's, would be the case, that we can be more honest with our grief because we're confronted with it,
right.
And we get to deepen with it, not bypass it, which is
right.
Easy to do, and then who knows what that does for long term, not having really met or gone through that archway that grief takes us, and it changes us, and thank goodness it does. And you know, the people I've worked with say they wouldn't want it any other way. You know, isn't that something? As hard as it is, they wouldn't wish it away because they are, they're living meaningfully and working through something. And what's more important? Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, thank you.
Why do you think we've moved away from home burials or home visitations to really nothing? A lot of people have nothing now. They don't do any kind of ritual or prayer or gatherings.
So your question is why may have moved away from doing anything, not home.
Well,
but in general, why we don't have much in the way of death celebration
right.
anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I guess that gets into that big topic that we hear a lot of, that we're in a culture of denying death. And, you know, that could be an interesting conversation. What does that really mean? And, you know, how do we see that show up in our lives, in our culture? And we've taken that to such a point now where we don't have a relationship with it to know what it means other than a loss or that they've gone away somewhere, but there's sort of a vacuum of experience because we don't have much experience anymore.